Unplugged, the podcast. I have made it my mission to empower women to live their dreams, to live their life to the fullest. And my podcast, She Unplugged, is featuring those women and sometimes also men. I'm trying to tell a story of their path, their success, their difficulties, what made them the person they are today. Today, I'm featuring a old friend of mine. We have met many years ago and we have kept in loose contact, and I'm admiring this woman. I'm admiring her path. I'm admiring her authenticity. I'm admiring her character. And I'm admiring her courage, the courage to step out of 15 years in a very large corporate company, stepping out of her leadership position she was having in that company, and starting something completely new, starting her own business, starting a path that led her to where she is today. I've already talked a little bit about my amazing guest today, and now she's here. It was months, and I can honestly say months in the making, and I'm so happy that we're finally sitting down to have this conversation. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Anya.
So I've already talked a little bit that you have a corporate background. You worked in a large global company. Can you just tell us a little bit about what you did there? And I mean, you were there for 15 years. Almost. You know, what sort of positions did you go through?
Yeah. So I was first hired as a communication specialist, and you know, there was a lengthy recruitment process. And I remember thinking, oh, they didn't call me back. Oh, this will be bad. Probably I'm not ready for this environment yet. And then they did call me back. And I thought, okay, well, let me just stay for 2 years because I really need it on my CV now. I made a couple of different choices before. It didn't work out so well. So I need to stay for 2 years. So that was how I went in. And little did I know that I will stay almost 15 years and I'll be, you know, learning so much and meeting so many amazing people. I had the privilege to work with some fantastic leaders. And as a result of my passion for what I was doing, I was promoted every year almost, I believe. And I ended up to be a board member as a head of global communications. It was a fascinating path for me, almost too quick at some point. However, I did the best out of it and I learned so much throughout that journey. And I feel I could contribute and be of service to the organization too.
What made you say you felt sometimes almost it was too quick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you need to imagine I was 20 something years old and I have a faculty of arts. You know, that was my double master degree in German language and marketing communication. And, you know, I was in an IT environment that is first a very male dominant environment, 80-20 proportion male to female colleagues, which never bothered me. It's not a problem, but IT was quite far from my comfort zone. And at that time I was thinking like, is this really for me? Do I want to throw myself at this? Because I do everything fully. I don't do things halfway. So, you know, when I was considering, do I really want to invest more than 2 years into this? I consulted some of my mentors and some of the people that I respect. And, you know, this friend of mine said, well, so why are you considering it? It seems like it's flowing for you. Your career is flowing. I said, yes, but, you know, it's IT. I don't know. It's exciting on one hand. I know digitalization is the future, but it's just really what I want to do. I want to work with people. And this person looked at me and said, well, Dana, is there something you can't figure out when you look into that for too long enough? And I said, well, I don't know, but this is really a big enigma. Yeah, but tell me from your experience in the past, was there something you couldn't crack when you really focus on it long enough? Said, if you ask me that way, no. And so somehow there, you know, I decided, okay, this person is right. I really need to serve myself at this fully and give it a fair chance and then see where it leads me. And I'm very happy that I did that.
It's kind of like that mentor dared you to try, dared you to reconnect with your previous successes and learnings and take them into the future. And that's something pretty amazing. I mean, that's what we usually do in when I do NLP coaching. That's what we do. We connect to previous really good examples. We get those, the confidence from there, and we export it kind of like into the current situation. And I'm glad he, you know, the mentor had the sense to do that. That was amazing. When you look back, companies form us, companies change us, companies leave an imprint on us. When you compare the data at the beginning of that, of those nearly 15 years and the data afterwards, what part of the company did you take along? What part did you leave behind? Can you say that?
Yeah. That's a very interesting question. So I know I took a really big part from the company in the form of my husband, who is, you know, who is still part of the company. So, but joking aside, I mean, there's a lot I took away. I took away the ability to look at really complex challenges or complex projects and simplify them to a way that they're understandable. That's one example. I took away the ability to look forward, to be visionary, to create my future or the environments in the way I want to see them. And what I left behind, maybe restrictions of certain kind. I created a big freedom for myself in the same time. However difficult it was to separate from a fantastic employer that gave me a lot of opportunities.
When you say you left the restrictions behind, mm-hmm. we are in your CV at the point where you actually, so you stepped out of the corporate world and you found your own company. Can you take us a little bit on that journey? What triggered the thought in the first place? What were elements that empowered you to dare to step in there? And where were you maybe a little bit cautious about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first, I still feel a need to touch a little bit on what I said before, if you don't mind. Like when I said restrictions, now that you played it back, it wasn't a traditional form of restrictions. Yeah, so in a position of a head of global communications, I got amazing trust from my leaders. And we did some projects or some initiatives that were completely state of the art, and we were awarded many prizes. So I wasn't, as a leader, I didn't feel restricted to a traditional degree, right? There was lots of empowerment that I felt. And as a result, I believe jointly with the team, we could improve the environment where we worked and contribute to the engagement and performance as a result, because that's what business is about. I think the restrictions, I felt the restrictions were more somehow inside of me, maybe. Okay. So let me think about this. So after beauty 4 years on the management board, my husband got the offer to relocate to the US and continue his career over there. So I, of course, instantly said, okay, let's go. You know, I've been in this role. I'm happy to reinvent myself. Now it's about you. That's how our partnership works. And of course, I decided about my future in split seconds, right? And of course, you don't know, you can't know what will be in the future. But what I did know that I'm ready to deal with that, and then I'm ready to explore and reinvent. Yeah. And so at that moment, I decided to follow more my passions and took on a role as a lead for learning and development for a beautiful new establishing region. And I really loved, again, the freedom, right? That was something that is being established. So for some reason, my leaders knew where my nature is thriving, not in a very standardized, highly effective environment, but where, somewhere where you can build up something and bring it to blossoming, right? And so it was like another piece of to the puzzle, right? And after 4 years, we've chosen out of family reason, we've chosen to come back to Europe, or we didn't like to say go back, so we said we go forward to Europe. And somewhere in there started to be question marks again about my professional future and my career. And certainly for every parent, it's also linked with considerations about how you want to be as a parent, right? And I realized coming back to the word restrictions, I felt as if there was not as much traction with the environment, between me and the environment anymore. And that, you know, let's face it, a corporate organization is a huge, it's consisting of a huge amount of people. And there needs to be rules and processes to kind of orchestrate that. But there are imperfections in these systems, right? One of them, from my perspective, is that many times the way how talent is nurtured is, okay, this is on your CV, you've done this, so I have something like that here. You can go to this position. And, you know, I didn't feel like going forward to Europe and do something that I've done already, right? I wanted to develop. And I think, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are, what your family situation is. If you have that inner drive to constantly better yourself, you will not want to go for what you've done already, because you know that you left that behind, and you know you have grown people to be able to deal with that. And so somewhere there, I started to feel the restrictions.
Okay, now I understand better. And I find it beautiful, and I would like really to underline it for the listener and the viewer. It's in your language, very clear, the forward movement. It's the developing yourself further. It's about new challenges. It's always that, that's the sense I'm having. It's the forward drive. And even if you talk about leaving the US and moving to Europe, you know, you're specific about saying not back. We go to Europe. So yeah. That's something pretty amazing, I find. When I talk to other people, you know, very often it's not that clear in their language. So that is for the listener. Just listen out to how Dana speaks. Really integrated that way of thinking so much that her language just flows in the forward direction. You can hear her. So you were in Europe with your family, and the wish was there to develop yourself again, to have a new path, a new challenge, something where you can really dig your teeth in. And you decided to form a company.
Yeah.
What was at the beginning the mission?
Isabel is listening to you. The forward path for me is not necessarily to, you know, do another logical career move. It's more about my legacy, yeah, and my inner need to be of service. And now it sounds probably too big, but to the humankind, right? So we are here as a part of this interconnected humankind, and I do, my drive is to make a dent, yeah? Impact is what drives me. And so that's where, you know, once I've chosen to split my way from this great employer, it was really because I felt I could have a bigger impact outside. And it was that was the mission, right? So to create a service that is going in depth, that is business focused, that is ultimately about driving performance and thriving environments. However, you know, it's also about influencing leaders who are the multipliers of creating a change. And I guess somewhere there was the idea of creating my boutique consulting, BPG Consulting. I'm actually currently in a process of reshuffling and reshaping a little bit, so please stay tuned. Because I am allowing myself, you know, there's a constant movement in our life, and I'm allowing myself to enjoy this journey and kind of fine tune and learn on the go. And so my new idea or my new company will be launched hopefully still this year, where I think this, you will see that this idea is even more crystallized. The focus on leaders is even more crystallized.
And again, I step back and I just mirror something that I noticed. Forward movement is not necessarily, and you did that movement.
Yes.
Everybody who's only listening on the podcast, Dana did with her hands a stepping up movement. So a horizontal climb, which we usually bring in connection with, you know, with development and, you know, getting better at something. It's the upwards movement. And what I've noticed is that you allow yourself the vertical movement.
Yeah.
And in that way, specifying where you want to go. And this is also what I heard now. Now, when you first started your company, what was the service you offered?
Yeah, so, you know, it would be beautiful if I told you I had everything ready and I listed my services and then the phone rang. But, you know, life is not like that. We just relocated in, whoever has done international relocation with a 4-member family plus a dog, you know, that, you know, there was limited time to prepare launching a business. In the same time, COVID came just like after I unpacked the last box. COVID came. So there was a lot of adversity in the environment that I was dealing with. But I was incredibly lucky because the minute I said, you know, guys, thank you so much for all this, but you know, I'm on my path now. I'm super open to connect with all of you. However, this is my path now. I almost instantly had first clients.
Okay. Wow.
So it was, I think, 2 days after I had clients.
Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't have a perfect list and of services, but what I do offer is really service for leaders. I see myself as their thinking partner. To see what's happening in their environment through a different lens. You know, I help them also individually to work with their authenticity, because many times, you know, we see leaders and many times the spark that they had at the beginning, it almost vanishes because there's so much pressure, there's so much expectation, and it's hard to stay true, really true to yourself and to constantly feel excited for what you are doing. Or I don't think everyone can do that. There are many examples of leaders who can, and that's phenomenal. But then there are many people who feel isolated or at times overwhelmed, especially these days, or who have already implemented all the great ideas, but now what? Yeah, how do they bring the team to the next level? So I work with the leaders and look at these situations, or if they're in front of a change, or they aspire career growth, but they feel like it's not happening for them. So I do help them individually, but we also look at the whole environment. And you know, we then create a leadership strategy, and we also look at implementation if wished. So, you know, it's not a very narrow thing, and I could speak about it for an hour because it's very exciting to me.
No, and it's interesting because I remember reading in my preparation that everybody says, you know, you need to find your niche, the one thing, the one, your ideal client, give the ideal client a name and an age, a job position. That's where you're focusing and that's who you're talking to. And from what I read in the preparation, it's the permission to not do that.
Yeah.
To say, well, I'm not having just one service, but I'm having the wider service. And another podcast guest who I talked to, she said, well, my client is a human.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all those different aspects of being human and leadership, but also private. And it's all a package. I can't just say one thing. Would you agree that that's the same way you're looking at your business and at your services?
Fully, fully. I fully subscribe that. I'm smiling here big time, because it really was quite a painful process for me to allow myself not to have a niche. And actually, then I realized, actually, that's my niche, not to have a niche, right? Because it's my niche to be able to create the connections between all the pieces that the individual leader environment experiences. So there is actually a niche on not having a niche, and getting there to be comfortable with that I think it's quite a journey to go.
I signed that one. But let me ask you that. If people would be looking for a leadership coach, what are you known for? I mean, what qualities out of maybe also the corporate world, but your personality and everything, what are you bringing to the table?
Well, you know, the best is to ask my clients. But what I get from them, and I did a little survey actually just recently on this question, and I think what they are saying is that I'm really able to see the world through their eyes, which is, you know, my curiosity is, who are you as a human, as a leader? Where are your strengths? How can we make that, how can we ignite that fire? And how can you then ignite the team? And I think it's also about the ability to understand relatively quickly, also complex situations. Then I also bring the global experience to the table, right? So I'm super comfortable to work with any culture. You know, when I speak to C-level executives or I speak with a starting manager, it's equally important to me. And it's equally exciting to me. Yeah, because there's a, you know, there's this desire in me to understand you. So let's put it this way. There's no cookie cutter approach. Every of my programs is tailored to the particular individual as well.
And I think, again, that might be your niche.
Yeah.
There is no shelf that you have in your office where you take the folder and you just apply it to the first 100, 200 clients. It's, but you're laughing, but
yeah, I know.
In many ways, that is very often the case. And when I say, well, I'm working with you and I'm looking at you and I want to find out who you are, then none of the other programs would apply, because everybody is unique and needs a certain unique approach to their questions. So that could be also unique.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, absolutely. Haven't seen it that way, but for sure, yeah. And, you know, I have this approach first place because, you know, it's also my personal purpose to bring purpose back to life, back to business, to bring the human angle in everything I do. And besides that is my purpose, I actually have seen it work. Yeah, so maybe if you don't mind, let me just throw this in. So I said I was promoted really quickly, right? And there were moments that I was absolutely not ready to deal with. Yeah. So whether we like it or not, I would have voted when I was 20 something that I'm not ready for this, but I didn't have the life experiences to withstand the pressure that was put on me. And just as an example, what was happening, because some of the leaders that are listening to this may relate to this. So I was appointed to head of global comms my boss didn't even manage to hand over the budget because she went to the hospital to deliver her baby, which is, of course, much bigger job to deliver. And in 2 months or 2 weeks later, some between 2 weeks and 2 months later, I was told I have to let half of the team go and deliver the same service. And, you know, these were situations that I really, you know, no program, no book prepares you for that. You have to act in that moment. And I really felt in that moment, I need help, right? Not that I am helpless, but I will be stronger with a discussion partner, with a thinking partner on the side. And, you know, there are so many coaches and so many consultants, but I wasn't comfortable to go a traditional path, right? And just pick up the phone and see who sits with me. And as life wanted, I was connected to a friend with an amazing mentor and performance coach. And he had it all, right? He was from spiritual to a really tough business person, to a sports person. I mean, he had this wide area of abilities, and that what really resonated me, because I am also kind of a rainbow of things, right? So you can choose which one you need in what moment, but I needed someone like that for myself to be able to trust and relate. And you know, nowadays this idea that leadership is also about spirituality and the mental psychological health is quite a common way of thinking, if you like, not for everyone, but it's already clear, especially during pandemic, that you need to take care of all those areas for yourself if you want to be successful long term. But, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't a very common path. And that's why I, you know, that's why I went for it, because it resonated with me and it absolutely catapulted my career. So that somewhere there, you know, the passion was started for coaching, mentoring, for being a thinking partner.
And I love that sentence that you said, you weren't helpless, but it made you stronger. I think that is a beautiful description of what coaching and mentoring can be. It doesn't mean you have to be helpless before you actually seek out a coach or a mentor. But imagine how much stronger you could be with one on your side. You call them your thinking partners. I love that word. I might actually borrow that word. But I love that way of thinking, a thinking partner to bounce off ideas and see things through the lens of somebody else. I love that. Now, I know that in all of that, you started a passion project. And I think to anybody who is listening to the podcast or watching it, gets a real sense of that, yes, you are a passionate person. You are driven by passion. You're driven by that nearly need to change the world for a better place, to turn it around. And you started the project Fear. Can you tell us a little bit how that started, what the intention was there?
Yeah, for sure. Your words around nearly me are still resonating with me. It's so true. Yeah, the Fear project was also kind of coming out of a nearly need, because somewhere during my stay or my service in corporate world, I was observing that we are wasting an incredible amount of energy and efforts that are not caused by the need of the business environment. It's caused by us as humans. So I started to observe that, and I've seen that many times when people were not acting out of the best interest of the organization, it was like a cumulative, like an avalanche of miscommunication and wrong direction. And it just was going on and on and on, and like an avalanche. And I, many times when it came to my involvement, I looked at the big piece of snow and I'm thinking, like, where did this whole thing started? And why did we end up in this, with this in our garden? Because it doesn't belong here. And in the process of going through the snow that the avalanche brought, I would then mostly discover that at the beginning was someone with some kind of emotional need, with some kind of unmanaged emotion. So they were either acting out of ego or out of fear, but it was not a consideration of the overall organization and what's the best going forward. And it wasn't definitely in partnership and in cooperation. So somewhere there, I started to be interested in what is the difference between someone who can manage their fears and who is an amazing leader, and how do the global most admirable leaders, from my perspective, deal with emotions such as fear, to not let them being driven by the fear, but to turn that emotion into a driver force instead.
What comes to mind is, and I obviously don't have it in front of me, but there's a quote by Nelson Mandela, I'm paraphrasing, that courage or courageous people are not those ones who act without fear, but courageous people are those who act in spite of fear. And I always thought that that resonated with me, because I think we all know in certain circumstances fear, if that's now the fear of height or the fear in business to take a certain decision, the feeling, the emotion we have. What did you discover, or how did you go about to discover the answer why certain leaders act in spite of their fear and some don't?
Mm-hmm. Definitely self-awareness and emotional maturity play a big role. You can act in spite of fear or act driven by fear. And there will be, the environment will immediately feel the difference. And one is the result of avalanche, and the other result is actually a high level of vulnerability and a high level of trust of the environment you are in. There's definitely some common themes that are emerging through those now 11 conversations I had with some top leaders that I picked. My plan is to further analyze them and prepare for everyone who is interested then kind of a synopsis of that wisdom that I collected. And just to give you an example, I mean, some of the common themes is to not react instantly, right? Know yourself enough to know, oh, now it is fear. And then pause and try to analyze what are the triggers for you to feel fear, and what do you really fear? Because, and now this is Dana interpretation, I see fear as a valuable information. If you dive deeper and analyze what the triggers are, it's actually your body and your mind telling you something that might be very helpful. But what differentiates us from animals is this ability, because they also feel fear. My dog shows the fear, but instantly, right? But my dog, even though she's a lovable black lab, she doesn't have the ability that I have to pause and now rationally figure out what's happening inside of me and what is now the best response to the situation so that it's constructive and so that it helps everyone involved.
So what I'm taking out of there is already a very, very practical tip for everybody. When you're feeling the fear, notice its fear and pause. I mean, I think that in itself is already a huge step, because when we are in very traumatic situations, we only have like three ways of reacting. We're running away, we're going for the fight, or we freeze. And that freeze is not the pause button. That's another freeze. That's a complete inability of doing something. So that conscious awareness, I am feeling anxious. I am feeling fearful, and still I remain present without doing something. I think that's a huge step. How can we learn that, Dana? Or how can we learn is maybe the end result, but what steps might help us to become more confident in pressing that pause button?
That's a wonderful question, and one that I'm addressing with my clients for sure. You know, I wish our brains worked like that, that we could just say, oh, now I'm aware, let's do it. But it's not like that, right? Because our brain is wired certain ways since the ancient times. How I guide my clients through this is to really do very little steps at first, right? So first, I would recommend that you start noticing. And this is actually something I also take away from my dear friend and mentor, Jean Davidson, who says, not this, right? That's the bit. Even before awareness, or it's somehow linked to awareness, she would speak definitely about that in depth. But I think noticing is the first step. So I have my clients notice and journal. When do they feel fear? And then we look at it together. It doesn't have to be a, you know, like a diary full day of fear, but just two scribbles quickly. Oh, I felt fear this time. This was happening. This was in the environment. And then you start observing certain trends and you can see what the trend is and what triggers you. And then as a next natural step, it's about starting to manage that situation, right? Or even prevent if possible, if it's helpful, prevent. Sometimes it's not helpful to prevent it or you can't prevent it. So managing would be applicable in that moment. How could that look like? Well, if I know that, for instance, and this will be a very bizarre example, but if heights trigger me, I have a fear of height, I'm not going to deliver my speech on a very tall stage, right? So you know, so this is very simplistic, but I think just to illustrate my idea, first notice, journal, observe trends, and then start little experiments and see what happens.
Let me just ask the next question that way. I mean, I've worked with the majority male leaders in the past, or when I did leadership training, the majority were male. How do they react when you say journal?
Yeah. No, if you... Yeah, you speak from experience, of course. So some of them, so you know, we are all creatures of habit. So if it sounds like you're a little girl who is supposed to run write in the diaries what happened that day, well, that's not what we are talking about. And honestly, there's nothing wrong with being a little girl and journaling. It's actually a tremendous way of to self-development. So it's about the context. So just like now I spoke about the little girl, it's about shifting the perspective, how you see that story that you're telling yourself, right? So if you're telling yourself, I don't have time for journaling, well, then we work actually on shifting that story around it, because I will dig deeper on why is that? Yeah, because there's usually some kind of truth that is your truth, but that is not helping maybe in the moment and you're preventing your own progress. So yes, there has been pushback, but usually, you know, when the clients speak about it and then they realize the first benefit that it gave them, they really experienced themselves a shift as a result of doing the journal, then they're fully on board. They really flow.
Mm. And I love that you're describing it as you dig deeper into the stories they are telling themselves. From my experience, it's usually not, I don't have time, but it goes in the direction of, that's something for women, that's too emotional, that's not me, that's not part of me, I have to be strong. And I try to sometimes reframe it away from the word journaling, which is like, seems to be a trigger word, to, well, you could do it in a way of a mind map. analyzing the situation, pressing the pause button, analyzing the situation can be done in any kind of way. If you feel more comfortable in doing a mind map, or for all I care, do it in an Excel sheet, I don't mind, but put down the information you're having at that moment. And from my experience, and I don't know how you see it, but from my experience, once they actually get over that blockage of writing in whatever form, then it flows.
Yeah, absolutely. I can sign that with blood. I think nowadays all these stereotypes, if you allow me to use that word that is getting misused, but all these ideas about how a leader should be, how a man should be, how a woman should be, I'm so happy that we live in times when this is starting to kind of crack a little bit. I'm not saying that the ideas are shattered, but they're already cracking in for the best of the world, I believe. So one of the questions I give to the leaders that I speak with is, why do you believe that we in business are not speaking about fear, while it's one of the key emotions that we humans have and it's affecting all of us? And the answers I get is that, there is a fear of being seen as weak. So now we don't speak about fear because we fear we'll be seen as weak. Yeah, so that already it tells us we should be speaking about fear. And it takes a lot of courage that you spoke about to actually allow yourself to do what's best in the moment and free yourself of the fear. And if to do the best in the moment is to actually say, yes, I am afraid for these reasons, and this is how I see this could play out, then you should just do it. If the best in the moment is journaling or taking notes or mind mapping, then I should do it. It does not matter what stereotypes or what ideas you're breaking with that. So it's one of the rules that I think it is a certain type of rule to help your thinking is ask yourself, what is the best in this moment? What is the best possible outcome? And what is the best thing I can do right now for the bigger organization when it comes to this situation now?
When you say you're going in with a question, what's the best possible outcome? How do you feel about that typical question? What's actually the worst that can happen? How does that play into the behavior?
I don't give this question to the leaders that I interview. However, I do. There are certain clients whom I have asked, what is the worst thing that can happen now? And mostly, to my experience, it's a helpful question for those who are really quite restricted, if not frozen, to use your expression from before, if not frozen because of fear, right? So there are certain people, and again, there's nothing wrong with that, but there are certain people who are they restrict themselves in life because of how the fear grasps them. So I think in that moment, I have seen results with that question where people then say, well, actually, I can totally live with the worst thing that can happen. So why am I worrying first place and not allowing me, myself, to go out there and explore more? But we are not wired that way. I think our brains, as per research, our brains are actually trying to keep us safe. That's what they are designed to do, right? And it's really, really hard for all of us to actually put ourselves out of the comfort zone, even though we know it's good for us. even though we know that's how development, that's how growth, that's how experience happens, but it's still really hard. So to answer a question, I have found the question really effective with people who are very restricted by fear.
And I think you're right. Our brains are not wired that way. Our brains are, like you said, to keep us safe. And that means at the same time, keep us stuck, keep us in the situation, maybe in the job that we don't like, not asking for the promotion we think we actually want, not daring to go completely out of our comfort zone, maybe finding a new job or, I don't know, whatever it is, staying with a partner that doesn't feel right anymore. It's always, we know what it feels like right now. And although that feeling right now is not glorious, it's not happy, it's not content, but everything outside we fear because we don't know what's happening there. So we rather stay stuck. And I know from your work, that's always also an intention to say, okay, well, you know what is here, but how about having a little peek over here? You know, people don't need to jump, but having a little peek. How do you empower people who you sense are stuck in their comfort zone, in their balance, in their, I know my environment, I know how things work, but I have a sense that over there, it's better. How do you empower them to make that shift?
Mm-hmm. So first of all, it's my deep belief that we all have all the resources we need to do that shift, yeah? It's about, however, there are individual ways how to kind of like open the different boxes so that, you know, you can come out and explore. One part of it is actually, it's linked to self-confidence to a degree, right? Because in order to allow no control, because what we are really doing is to allowing less of a control than in the situation we are right now, yeah? And we so want control. It's kind of the idea, I'm in control. But what is the opposite? I'm overwhelmed, right? It's too much. But it doesn't have to be the opposite. The other side of the coin can be just that you are flowing actually with what's happening. And so I think confidence plays into it because you have to have a healthy degree of belief in your own capabilities and your resourcefulness to allow yourself to be in situations that you don't seem to be, that you don't believe are predictable. So you either don't have experiences with it or you didn't have experience with it that you can relate to from the past. So I definitely do help my clients in the first place to notice and widen or enlarge their self-awareness. And from there, go to more self-confidence. And from there, go into the unknown.
With all the research you have done now around fear emotions, I wrote down, how has your project, how has your work changed you and your self-awareness or behavior pattern around fear?
What a beautiful question. I mean, it's just recently, actually, that my husband and I reflected about the change of professional change and growth and also personal change that we have been going through. And I know that I basically said, you know, I actually lost any fear. And I mean, I really, through the work, I have freed myself of fear to a very good degree. Certainly, we could speak about fear of death or fear of, you know, your child getting hurt, certainly. That is something to manage, work with. However, when I reflect on it, I lost fear to a really big degree through the work I have done.
At the beginning, you said fear has positive effects. It helps us in certain ways. So if you say, I've lost fear, how do you keep those positive aspects of fear?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for connecting those two ends. So when I say, I hope I will respond to your question. So please bring the question back up if I don't. But when I say I've lost fear, is what I mean is I freed myself of the impact of fear had on me in the past.
Okay.
As every human being, I do feel fear at times. It has, however, no further immediate impact on me because I know how to work with it so quickly. It's so inherent to me that I don't even have to think about it. And the examples I gave about, for instance, my children getting hurt, oh yeah, of course that's there. And I have to work with that. That's still where I have to work with it. But I'm also happy about it. It would be strange if my child was jumping head down on the trampoline and I would feel no fear. It is not the end game. I think the end game that we are, that is helpful to humankind is to free ourselves of the negative impact that fear has on us so that we can decide consciously about our response to the events that is the best possible for everyone involved in the situation.
I think that's good that you clarified it. So you feel the fear, but you do it anyway. You push through, you ask yourself, and you have said that several times and I didn't notice it. You ask yourself, what's the best thing I can do now for the bigger picture? If that's now the family system or the team or even then the company, when you're going into the C-level of coaching, what's the best response to the situation? I think I have a sense if leaders would ask themselves that question at least once a day, it would change hopefully it would change our degree of just firefighting, of just doing things for the response of having done something to appear busy. But if you have that element of pause and ask yourself, okay, what's the best possible response now? And sit with that question and maybe even go into the team and say, you know, I'm wondering, I don't know right now, but I'm wondering about this question. I find that makes you an even stronger leader.
Yeah, that's very powerful. What I just heard from you, I think we really think alike. And probably our experiences with leaders are very similar. I don't know how you, Anya, but I found that already the idea of granting yourself some time for reflection is surprisingly new to many, I don't want to just say leaders, but to many human beings. Yeah, some time for reflection. Why have I reacted the way I did? Why did I behave the way I did? And kind of just, I feel that that's where it starts, is noticing. It starts the possibility of starting an avalanche of events that is unfavorable to you and everyone else. That's the opportunity to do it. And on the contrary, just like you said, it's completely okay to come out vulnerable or not knowledgeable of everything. Some of my most powerful moments in leadership was when I actually acknowledged my mistakes and asked for help. And that's where, you know, I knew that I built the trust of the team. And I knew, or I can still ask them now, but I knew that they would do the same because I opened the door to the possibility of being vulnerable and being human. So it's not about performance, right? All the time. Yeah. And perfection.
I think it's part of it, but it's the definition of performance that needs to shift. In business, very often performance I find is connected to the results. The results that come from me, the ideas that come from me, the problems that I solve. But if we shift the definition of performance to How did we get there? What was the process? Not so much who did what, but the end result. If the team came up with the answer, cool. If I created a culture where we are allowed to make mistakes and we come out and say, look, messed that up, wrong decision. I'm honest, wrong decision. That allows us to try out, even in business, to try it, especially now in times where we are right now. We need to redefine and reinvent our businesses to allow things to fail and to say, okay, failed. Try another one. I think that would make a huge shift in the business environment.
Yeah, you know, one quote I think from Edison popped up in my mind as you just mentioned that. It went something like this, as a paraphrase. I didn't fail 99 times. I invented 99 ways how it didn't work. Yeah, so it's exactly about reframing, right? It's about knowing, and again, confidence plays into it, but knowing that if the outcome is not as I have wished for it, it's actually information that I can use for the future to do it better again.
Absolutely. We talked about a PhD thesis and master thesis the other day with my daughters. And I said clearly to them, my master thesis is all experiments. I did it in chemistry, so that was a lifetime ago. All experiments, and they all failed. That's my master thesis. A year of failed experiments. And we came out with, okay, none of that works. Okay. Somebody else will pick it up where I had left it off and say, okay, if all of that doesn't work, well, then I take the next one until we find the solution. So I definitely learned during my master thesis what it comes from disappointment to disappointment day after day. The entire year was that. You teased us a little bit, Dana. You teased us in a way of saying, well, okay, so I'm doing something else and maybe it's tell us a little bit more.
Sure.
What are you planning to do?
Yes. So I think the essence is what we've discussed. You know, I really plan to put forward in a structured way the work with leaders that I find creates value in a society for the leaders and for the organizations. And it's really about speaking about with it in a less, I hope I'm allowed to say this, but in a less consultant way, but and really putting the words out there the way I work with the leaders. So it's not a shift in what I do, but it's about expressing it in a way that people really understand well what I do, and is linked to exploring the authentic style of that leader and exploring how through identifying that authentic style, the leaders and the team's performance can be boosted. And boosted in a way, not that we work longer hours, because we all know in nowadays world that this is not sustainable and it's a big topic, but to improve in a way that we live actually sustainable lives and have business success.
That sounds like a beautiful vision. Beautiful. Dana, at the end of the podcast, I always come up with the same question. Was there a question that you had wished I had asked and I didn't, so you can answer it now? Or is there something where you say, well, now looking back at our conversation past hour or so, so something where you would say, well, that's the essence, that's the gist, that's what I really want to underline for the listener and for the viewer.
I would like to encourage everyone to allow themselves to create a space and allow themselves the possibility that what they feel deep down is they wanted to fulfill or they wanted to do something that's maybe hidden, unspoken, but wants to, they wanted to always experience, they wanted to be that person, to allow that to come out. I think if the pandemic is teaching us something, all of us, independent of our experiences, is that there's no time to waste. That, you know, we have to strip down where we focus our energy to the essential. And what is essential? Essential, I believe, is to bring forward the best so that we can actually create something better for all of us, for your direct children, for the community that you are in. And I'm quite sure that if you dig somewhere, there is some kind of something that wants to come to the surface. So I'd like to encourage everyone to at least explore what it is that is brewing and then take that leap and go do it. Be that person that you always desire to be.
There's not much to add because it moves me how you phrased it. Dana, I can only thank you that you took the time out of your busy schedule to come into the podcast. And please don't wait another, I don't know how many years it was now, before we reconnect and maybe share a little bit more of our path together. Thank you very much, Dana.
It was a privilege and pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You heard a production by Anja Förster. Copyright Anja Förster. Music by audionautics.com.